Hey everyone, I'm Scott Cunningham, aka Scott C. Business, and welcome back to another episode of Tech and Things. This is episode 549, titled Decentralize Your Life, and we're going to be jumping in and talking about stablecoins, BRICS's gold-backed currency, OpenAI's cryptocurrency WorldCoin, and then how to deal with these coming CBDCs, attacks against privacy, anonymity, and a lot of the things that are core to the original idea of blockchain and cryptocurrency. So the last portion of this, which will be the longest portion, we'll be talking about decentralizing your life and what you can do in terms of privacy, security, finances, etc., to better protect yourself and prepare for the future. So let's dive into all of that after a quick word from my sponsor.
A big thank you and shout out to our sponsor, Apex One, that offers the benefits of a cryptocurrency exchange combined with AI to maximize your profits. Plus, they don't require KYC. So check out apexone.ai today.
So we've talked a lot about CBDCs, KYC, and blockchain IDs in the past, but we've not really gone into deep with more what's happening now, with things like WorldCoin, like BRICS's currency. So we'll get into all that today. We've also discussed the unreliability of centralized crypto exchanges and centralized financial institutions in the last episode, but we're going to be focused more today on decentralization and what you can do on your end to enhance your finances, your security, your independence, privacy, cybersecurity, and anonymity. Before we dive into that, though, as I mentioned, we will be covering some of the latest happenings, and we'll take a look at all that after I go through a brief refresher on stablecoins and why they're not very good. And we'll zero in on Tether and USDC. So for a quick refresher on stablecoins, they are cryptocurrencies that are pegged to a fiat currency. So for example, something pegged against the US dollar and is supposed to remain the exact same value as the US dollar, like Tether, USDT. The point of these is so that you have very easy liquidity and you don't have to worry about selling your Bitcoin and then directly doing it on an exchange and then cashing out. You could do it in a more decentralized way through swap exchanges, DEXs, etc., and just providing you a lot more liquidity within the crypto market while not losing any of the value. Now, while that all sounds very good, and fiat dollars, just to do a quick refresher again, are sovereign currencies like Canadian dollars, US dollars, etc. So a quick refresher on Tether. Today, Tether lists their cash equivalents on their transparency report at tether.to/transparency. 84.7% of their reserves are in cash and cash equivalents, which is very misleading to the average person because below that, it says that their actual cash, the actual percentage in actual cash and not equivalents, is only 0.69. So in total, because that's only 84.7%, you've really only got 0.584% in actual cash. This means that it's such a fraction of a fraction of a percentage of the real money that's actually being held and not loaned out, or they're making money on it otherwise. Should you really feel safe with them managing over $83 billion worth of stablecoins and loaning all that out to profit off your money? Tether.to/legal. If you go in there and you actually take a look at their terms, you'll see that they actually say you can't use Tether if you live in the United States, which is very interesting. But regardless, if you violate any of their terms, there's grave consequences. And we know what that looks like. It's them taking all of your money and freezing all your funds. And you automatically agree to this contract, this legal contract, by using and buying the currency. So you're automatically agreeing just by having it, whether or not you agree. Their ban list is now at 917 addresses, meaning that they've banned 917 wallets that were using Tether and hold Tether. They've either frozen all their funds or stolen them or what have you, but those people lost all of their funds. Similarly to that, we've got USDC, which is backed by, it's very similar in concept, but it's smaller. It's backed by Coinbase, Circle, and JP Morgan Chase Bank. They've banned 174 addresses. I will get further into the whole issue around banning addresses, having blacklists, all this kind of stuff in a future video called The Cost of Centralization. But the point of this is really just a quick refresher to say that stablecoins are not worth holding. And algorithmic stablecoins are even worse. Commodity-backed stablecoins have performed very poorly in the past. And the worst of the worst are CBDCs, or central bank digital currencies, which are on the rise and on the way very, very soon. Now, all of this in mind, let's move on to talk about BRICS gold-backed currency, which is why I wanted to start by prefacing with that. BRICS is now developing a gold-backed currency. BRICS is the alliance that is rival to NATO, essentially. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and many more, with currently over 42 countries that have applied, or 41, sorry. Which is very, like, astonishing that there's so many, and especially that their GDP is extremely outpacing NATO, like, to a ridiculous amount, their growth, at least, in the last 20 years. I think it's very interesting that they want to start a gold-backed currency, and I think that's a good idea to sort of capture the ideals of the West, of what we're craving, of what we've lost. America lasted 54 years on the gold standard before starting to wean off it, and eventually fully ended it after 92 years. So the real question is, how long will BRICS last before doing the exact same thing? And more importantly, how can they ensure that that won't? They're calling it a gold-backed digital currency, which sounds very similar to a central bank digital currency, a CBDC. I've explained in the past why commodity-backed stablecoins don't operate very well. They have many similar traditional banking issues and institutional trust issues, such as you have to trust the institution to not be lying about the amount of gold, and that they're adequately securing the gold, and that it's not going to be able to be stolen, etc., and that that's insured, which none of that is going to be the case. You have to trust that they will not later inflate the supply and drop the standard, as the US had done. And you have to trust that they will not blacklist, freeze your transactions, take all your money in the same way that centralized stablecoin providers already do, which I have shown, and again, we'll dive into more deeply in a future video. But still, 41 countries have applied to be part of BRICS, and as I mentioned, they do have a much higher GDP growth over the past 20 years or so than NATO. Extremely more. Like, I believe it was 88% for the US and like over 1,000 for China. So, just to put that into perspective, is this a good opportunity to invest in, or is this a way for them to take your hard-earned money? I don't trust CBDCs, and I don't trust commodity-backed stablecoins, so I'm very interested to see where this all goes. On the plus side, I do recognize that this will probably help Bitcoin and gold tremendously, and in that sense, I'm very excited. WorldCoin is the new project from OpenAI, who designed ChatGPT, and WorldCoin is an attempt to basically verify all humans in the world onto one financial network, and then create a UBI system. I'm not sure how this would work or how this is sustainable, etc., but they're going to do all of this by verifying your eye scan. They decided to choose eye scan because they say it's the easiest, but in my mind, it's because it's the hardest to change. It is the most permanent, which is the most concerning, because you'll never be able to get it back. Included in their legal is that once they do have your eye scan, it will never be deleted or removed. And you don't actually own it, they own it. So they're basically buying it from you without really saying so, because they're saying that they're not going to sell your eye scan. But they've already bought it. I don't know if they're necessarily going to sell it or monetize it, but they're going to do something with it. Whether or not they use it to make money, maybe they use it to have control. People are signing up. There's over 2 million signups, supposedly, and we're going to get into whether or not this is accurate, but as they claim on their website, over 2 million signups. They've got 35 countries where they have orb stations for people to sign up, and they claim there's every 8 seconds, they're getting one signup, which seems pretty ambitious, but we're going to get into that. And people giving up their eye scans for a very small amount of money, they really are basically selling their eye scan for like $50 or something like that. And while $50 might sound great and you don't think they're going to do anything wrong with your eye scan, your eye scan is the most expensive biometric that you have to offer. Your face ID scan can change over time. Your biometric for your fingerprint can be burnt off, changed, etc. Your eye scan, unless you go blind, which is, or like, you know, have an eye injury, much, much less likely to change. And it's extremely valuable in terms of like data and what it's actually worth. Worth a lot more than $50, I'll tell you that. But people are selling away some of their most valuable biometrics without really realizing it for a little over $50 currently, because as far as I know, you get 25 WLD tokens worth a little over $57 currently at the $2.29 value currently listed on CoinMarketCap for WLD. And because it's an Ethereum token, it's pretty widely traded already, Uniswap, Binance, everything. One thing I'll say is like, it's good that it's on Ethereum, because as someone who likes Ethereum and invests in Ethereum, that's a good sign for me, but I definitely don't like the concept, and I don't know how they'll expect to be sending out a ton of transactions on Ethereum unless they're very confident that Ethereum will offer what they need, which then makes me very curious as to how confident they are in Ethereum with the new upgrade, etc., and how they're so confident. But I mean, again, good for me for investing in Ethereum, good for Ethereum investors. So they're in over 35 countries. That includes countries such as the US, India, Kenya, South Korea. They're going to promise a UBI. So they're going to be sending out transactions to all these wallet holders. I believe it was something like, for now, one WLD token a week indefinitely, or whenever they decide not to. I'm not sure how that's going to work. Regardless of all that more speculative stuff about, you know, like how much you're actually going to receive, etc., what I want to get into is the legitimacy of their claims, because this is very interesting. We have one where either they're lying, or two, they're really misrepresenting the way this project is run. So either way, it's pretty bad. So currently, they say they have 2,139,000 signups. They've got these in 34 countries. Apparently, there's 120 countries listed in total that have actually been able to sign up. They say over the last 7 days for wallet transactions, they have 191,000 wallet transactions. People have claimed over 13 million WLD, which means that they've given away, you know, over $26 million worth of WLD. Why would they be able to afford that? And why would they be doing this if it was all free? Great question. More importantly, is this accurate? You can go to their Etherscan address and you can actually see that for the WorldCoin, WLD, there's 4,616 holders. So you might think, okay, but how is there only 4,000 holders, a little over 4,500 holders, if their website claims that they have over 2 million signups? Well, I guess it's one of three things. Either they're just simply not giving people the coins after they sign up, because these are verified World ID signups. Either they're not giving people the coins and they're lying, or they're doing it all on the platform, right? It's not being recorded on the blockchain because they're not really giving you the coins. They're just showing it as a value on the app. And they're doing this to save money for ETH gas transaction fees. So it's more sinister than that, because that means you don't truly, truly own the cryptocurrency. And you don't actually know if the numbers they're reporting are accurate, because it's all just within their own application. Again, it says 191,000 transactions in the past 7 days, but total transfers listed on Etherscan is 18,126. So again, they're doing it all within their app, or they're just straight out lying about everything outright. I think it's more likely that they are doing it all within their own application, and they're claiming that it's transactions and there's signups and all this stuff, even though people aren't actually receiving the coins for real in their own wallets, because they're saying, okay, well, we gave these people coins. Whether or not they actually withdraw them and truly own them is a whole other situation. And I think that's the big discrepancy here. Again, I'm not saying it's impossible that they're lying outright. I'm just suggesting that it's much more likely that they're just misleading, as many, many projects do. Like Fivi, so many people bought NFTs on there and then couldn't get out, couldn't get their money out, couldn't do the transactions. It was all monitored. and regulated through the app stores. It wasn't real cryptocurrency that you were like buying and selling. It was all just a centralized version of that. And that is never a good sign because, again, we don't know what they're really doing behind the scenes. People don't really own those coins. They haven't really given out $26 million if people aren't able to actually claim that and sell that. Or people are just, you know, not technically inclined and they don't know how to do that. There's a lot of questions up in the air. Maybe some of this will be answered in the future, but for now, at the very bare minimum, their website is very, very, very largely misleading people as to what's really going on. Because again, only 4,616 out of millions actually have WorldCoin deposited into their wallet. So where is all this coin? It's all being held by the company. We'll see what happens with that, and I will continue to follow that and give any updates if I see anything major in future episodes. But now we are going to change gears a little bit. Decentralizing your life is more than a guide. It is like a lifestyle. So keep it in mind that, you know, this is a spectrum. You don't have to do everything, and I'm not going to dive in deep into all of the things you can do. It's more so like a list to give you a starting point to start thinking about different things that you can do. And I'll kind of go through it and mention what's more realistic, what you really should be doing versus, you know, what's, you know, extreme, you know, cybersecurity, et cetera, all that kind of stuff. So the core principles that I would say to keep in mind are freedom, privacy, anonymity, decentralization, financial independence, and security. These are all like core tenets to this sort of lifestyle, which is a little confusing to have decentralization in a lifestyle that's decentralized, but I'll break it all down. These are very important to just keep in mind for when you're choosing a new email provider, choosing a new service, when you're creating a new account, when you're creating a new password. For most of what you do online, try to keep these core tenets in mind if you want to be benefiting the most from your online experience. And I'm sure most people do want that. They just might not be aware of some of these things, or you might not want to take the extra steps needed to secure your online identity, accounts, all that kind of stuff. However, it's absolutely worth your time, and you don't know what data and privacy and things you're really giving up until they're gone, or they might already just be gone and you're unaware. But if you knew what you were giving up, you wouldn't be giving it up. So let's dive in. First, we'll go through cybersecurity. Here, I'll give some basic points because this probably needs a little bit more explaining to really address how important it is. Password management. So using something like what I use, Dashlane, to manage all your passwords is very, very useful because you shouldn't be reusing passwords. If possible, you want to have distinct passwords for all of your accounts. You want to silo off all of your accounts. And this goes for everything. Siloing off your different compartments of your life are very, very important. So for example, personal, work, you've got different emails for your work email and your personal email. You want to be doing the same thing for your passwords, for your emails, for your various accounts, wherever possible. So a good example of this for passwords is you have a different password for your bank. You have a different password for your crypto accounts and your financial accounts. You have a different password for your email, a different password for your socials. I mean, in a perfect world, you would have a different password for everything. But if you don't want to rely on using generated passwords from your password manager, you want to still be able to remember your passwords in case there's an issue. You also want to be changing your passwords annually to avoid any issues around like hacks or breaches or whatever, where people have gotten passwords from something and then yours was compromised. You can use something like, have I been pwned to check if your account was hacked and all that kind of stuff. There's lots of different places where you can do this, like avast.com/hackcheck, and you can see if your emails were compromised at any point. And then you can use tools like passwordmeter.com to create your passwords and assess how good your password strength is. But beyond that, you should also be using two-factor authentication wherever you can. I like Authy. But there's a lot of good ones out there because you don't want to be using your phone where possible. You want your phone to be private and not connected to anything. And we'll get into that in a little bit as well to avoid SIM swaps and spam, etc. An optimal password I mean, obviously, the longer it is, the more characters, the more randomization, it's going to be better. But for you to be able to remember it, in my mind, this is an optimal process for creating a password. It's a password that has three words. They're not connected to anything. Like, it's not your dog's name. It's not anything like that. With one capital letter in there, three numbers in there somewhere, and at least one special character in there. An example, 471, exclamation mark, girl, rainbow, bridge, and the E at the very end is capitalized. You can do this however you want, but this is just a good starting place for crafting a good password that isn't super hard to remember. But obviously, you can go much further than this, and you could do five words. But the key here is making it so that it's not so challenging of a password that you'll never remember it, but it's good enough that it can pass the password meter test and last for a very long time. I like to do checks on how long would it take for a computer to actually crack my password via brute force, and then go based on that. And now for your email security, very similarly to what we just discussed, you want to have it all siloed off. So an email for your banking, an email for your social media, an email for just your personal stuff. Ideally, you'd avoid public-facing emails. You don't want your email listed anywhere that you're using for your bank account, for example. And we'll talk a little bit more about having backup emails and hidden emails for spam based on VoIP, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Using multiple emails that are also non-identifiable to you. So you don't want to have an email. I mean, maybe for your public facing email, right? You might have your name at whateveremail.com. But for your bank, your email should be something random and have nothing to do with you. So there's no identifiable way to connect you and your bank to that email. You want things siloed off. Again, that's kind of the ongoing theme here, is you want everything to be siloed off and not connected to each other. You don't want someone to be able to easily point to a bunch of different accounts and passwords and emails, and they all point to you. That's the last thing you want. So you want to have your emails for your bank, your crypto, your finances, all that stuff private. You do not want to have that posted anywhere. You want to have a public one and then private ones. Again, as I mentioned, check your emails and such for password leaks and all that at haveibeenpwned.com. There's many other ones. In the past, I would have used and recommended Proton Mail, but they do track and report IP addresses. So it's really hard to ever fully trust an email provider and be like, they are 100% good to go. I'm looking at Tutanota, Skiff, and Prevail, and looking at other alternatives right now. But, do use something that you trust. I don't have a perfect recommendation currently, but I'm looking into different options out there. For security and privacy, you want to be using a VPN wherever you can. Use a secure browser. Use a private browser if you have to. I really enjoy using Brave browser. It's very good for privacy and security. And it also can block all ads and trackers, which is another thing that is ideal to have. You want to limit permissions on your social media accounts and maximize your privacy options. You want to use antivirus software. You want to use basic things like firewalls. You want to update your system regularly. You want to do all the basics. You want to use end-to-end encrypted messaging platforms where possible, like Signal. Maybe not for basic conversations, but if you're talking about something that a little more, you know, private or of concern that you wouldn't want to be shared with everyone, I would recommend using end-to-end encrypted messaging platforms. And again, I don't even think Signal is perfect because you still need your phone number to get set up, but they're pretty well praised for being truly end-to-end encrypted. So that's a decent example. Also, using open source software where possible is also very ideal. You want to be using things where everyone knows what's in it through and through. And if you can and you understand how to, you should be using a Linux operating system rather than Mac or Windows. Zero knowledge services as well. Not very popular buzzwords. So you're probably not going to see a lot of that, but services that don't harvest your data or retain it, very, very ideal. You can also have a pseudonym or digital identity to obfuscate who you are, to not actually connect yourself to the account and be able to more freely express your thoughts and opinions. Lastly, and very importantly, we have VoIP services. So this allows you to keep your real phone number secure and hidden VoIP is voice over IP. So you'll have like a phone number, for example. I use MySudo. I have 3 phone numbers and 3 emails, and I can change them at any time, but it allows me to have compartmentalized my phone numbers and emails. So I have one for work, for personal, and then for security purposes. You can avoid spam. You can keep your phone number out of public view, you know, not have any issues with like voice data harvesting of someone calling and recording you, or SIM swap attacks, etc. VoIP is a great way to get around this. It's fairly cheap. If you use something like MySudo, for me, it's only like $7 a month. You could use cheaper options like the $4 a month one. So it's definitely non-expensive, and the benefit that you get out of it is immense. So I would highly recommend something like MySudo or just any VoIP service if you're willing to pay more for something more robust that could also offer you options for like a business as well. Understanding social engineering in general. So most hacks are simply results of social engineering. So just being aware how, you know, a hacker or a scammer might try to trick you online, you know, not clicking on emails you don't know, blocking emails that you don't know, be aware of potential scams, phishing websites, etc. You know, you get an email from Instagram that says, oh my gosh, someone's hacking your account, quickly click here to go fix it. And then people get worried and they go and click it. No, always, always go back to the actual account itself and log in directly if you think there's an issue, but never go through the email links. Never click links on emails in general. And just be very aware this is likely the way that they're going to get to you. It's not going to be through some sophisticated methodology. It's going to be very, very simple social interactions and tricking you. So an easy way to avoid this is to share as little personal identifiable information as possible, as we've discussed. If you don't provide any personal identifiable information, like you use a fake name, fake image, everything, every time, then it's very hard for you to be socially engineered because they won't be able to connect you back to what they're accessing. In terms of account creation, instead of using something like Google Sign In or Facebook Sign In, you should be creating net new accounts every time. This way, you're giving them less connection because, for example, if that account then has an issue, it's going to come back and reflect on your main account and all the other connected accounts. You want to connect as little accounts together as possible. There's very little benefit to doing so and very large penalization potential and the potential of negatives that could happen for connecting those accounts. Very little gain, very much to lose. And ideally, just opt into using platforms that don't collect personal information or have no KYC, especially if you're buying cryptocurrency for tax purposes and otherwise. I think a great website for resources and services that don't require KYC is kycnot.me. Great website with a nice updated list of those kinds of services. In terms of internet usage, you should just connect using an Ethernet cable. And you can do this through an adapter on your phone as well. Reducing the amount of Wi-Fi you use is key to avoiding potential, you know, people spying in on what you're doing or intercepting data, etc. Using secure end-to-end encrypted technologies and encryption wherever possible, and using DNS encryption. These are a little bit more advanced, but the easy recommendation here is just using an Ethernet cable. Having a fireproof and waterproof safe for storing backups of things and anything important. Having physical security, very good locks, having surveillance, etc. Different ways for you to deter and stay vigilant for any type of activity, sensor lights, etc. Anything like that, any physical or surveillance security is highly recommended. Having a crypto hardware wallet is very useful to have so that you can properly protect your cryptocurrency from online theft by having a physical token to actually access it. And then, as I mentioned before, staying educated about scams is always important. Social engineering is now at a new level with AI, from personalized mass emails to harvesting voice data and then recreating your voice accurately with something like 11 Labs and then impersonating you. Avoiding IoT devices and not utilizing them in your home is very important for privacy and security. I no longer use Alexa or Google Home because they're not reliable, and we know that they're always recording and listening for you to call on them. and that creates problems. We do not want these things. We've seen many instances where it's starting to become more concerning when people rely too heavily on IoT, like getting locked out of your house, all of your services locking down. And as more and more things become internet accessible, this is going to be more of a concern. Now, as a more extreme recommendation, you could also consider hosting your own services. Not that it's necessarily extreme, but I assume most people will not do this. And, you know, you could regularly look up your digital footprint. You could search yourself on Google and see what you can find. Now, if we're going to get a little bit more extreme, avoiding your biometric data being used anywhere. Again, I don't really think these are extreme, but I know most people won't do this. This is important with what we're talking about with WorldCoin. Biometric data is so, so valuable, and you do not want to be giving that out for free or very low cost. You can't change your eye, but something like a face scan or a fingerprint is much more, you know, tenable. Like, just putting my fingerprint on my phone is not that unique, whereas my eye, no one else is going to have the same eye that I have. So, you know, it's definitely something to keep in mind. And, you know, you can change your fingerprint, you could burn them off, etc. Unlikely that someone's going to burn off their eyes or have an eye injury the same way that you could easily have with your hand, depending on the finger, etc. So keep that in mind for biometric data. Some other more extreme examples for extreme anonymity and privacy. If you want to really go all the way, this is what I would recommend. You don't post any images of yourself online ever, and you remove anything that is posted. Not sharing any audio or video of yourself to avoid any replication. Similar to images, you don't want someone being able to recreate you in an image, voice, or audio recording. And you could also further use altered recordings of yourself if you did want to post something, using like a voice changer or whatever. If everything you post is not real, then that's good. And I'll explain in just a moment. Beyond that, you could also have fake images of yourself created by AI and then using those images if you did want to post, along with the altered recordings. And very, very soon, we'll have the same thing for video. Now, you might ask, why would you only use fake audio, video, and imagery of yourself? It's so that in the future that we're going to be experiencing very soon, where anyone can create a fake image of you, fake audio, fake video, and that can show you doing whatever they want to whomever they want in however, whatever way, and it's on you to prove that it's not real. This is the precedent currently being set in courts, where people present, you know, evidence that's claimed to be not real, and it's on the defendant to prove that it isn't real, rather than the one accusing them to prove that it is real. So the only easy way that I can think of being able to do this is if all of my data that they use to train for their deepfakes, their fake images, their fake audio, their fake recordings, if everything they used was already fake, then you could prove that it isn't you with an analyst. They could prove that, well, look here, we can prove that this isn't correct because you can see based on the training data that it's using the wrong imagery, the wrong audio, the wrong things to create that. That's the best way that I can possibly come up with to maybe combat that future issue where you have to prove that. I mean, I'm not in a very good place because I'm a public personality, so it's very hard to do so at this point. But if you're someone who hasn't really gotten into that yet, or if you're considering for the future of your kids and how they will interact online, it's something that you could start doing now. Again, these are very extreme recommendations, but definitely something to think about. So in terms of your finances, I would say that having multiple bank accounts is key. Preferably, you'd have one online bank, purely online, and one physical bank. More the merrier, you know, whatever you want to do. Having multiple stock investing accounts, one with your bank, one with a third party, and then having at least 6 months worth of expenses saved up and 3 months worth in cash. This is just 101 for, you know, keeping yourself at a good place financially and having backups and, you know, different ways to access your money and and, you know, keep yourself good if there's ever a power outage or whatever it happens to be, or if you lose your job, etc. Beyond that, as I mentioned, you should have cryptocurrency wallets, and that will hold your crypto. Having scarce assets, gold, silver, etc., and having that stored securely, and having access to your Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies that you could access through an ATM is also very, very useful to have outside of your wallet in case you need to grab something quickly. And you can have things like Dash, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin to be able to transact quickly as well, to be able to buy things like purchase gift cards, make direct payments, pay bills, all these kinds of things. And then beyond that, you can have alternative spending, things like gift cards, prepaid visas. You could use payment providers like PayPal, which I don't really recommend, but it never hurts to have a couple hundred dollars in there for an emergency in something that would allow PayPal. It's always good to have more venues of money to access instantly than not, but I would never store large amounts of money. These are emergency use case type deals. These are not where you're going to first. You're not using these regularly. You're not putting large amounts of money into these. You wouldn't, you know, buy $1,000 worth of gift cards. You're doing this in like a last resort. Alternative spending methods like using a prepaid Visa, gift cards, payment providers like PayPal, which I wouldn't recommend normally using, but having a couple hundred dollars on there for whatever reason is not a terrible idea, or a crypto Visa card where possible that doesn't require KYC. These are all great ideas, but I would only store a small amount of money on them because they're not reliable enough to have large amounts of money and treat them like a bank, because they're also going to penalize you and be very closely watching you based on how you use your account. I've seen this a lot with PayPal, for example. Tax obligations, how you can get deductions as like an entrepreneur or a small business owner, beyond just your average person who works a 9-to-5 and has their taxes just taken out immediately and then they get a tax return. There's always ways to lower your taxes if you're outside of the traditional financial system. And even then, there might be some ways, and you could consult, you know, a financial advisor to learn more. But having a basic understanding of your taxes is always useful. And investing wise, in Canada, you can consider using a TFSA or utilizing accounts. I mean, there's accounts in the United States too, where you can deposit money into your retirement fund and have that matched, or buy stock through the company you work with and they'll match that to a certain amount. Any kind of benefits or loopholes that allow you to benefit that are provided to you, you should be taking advantage of where possible. But obviously understanding that, you know, if you're using a stock exchange, you don't nearly have as much freedom as you do as with cryptocurrency. But again, you do want to diversify as much as possible so that your finances are quote unquote decentralized. Now, for the last portion, we'll cover anything that I hadn't really covered in the other two sections, or might go into one of those sections, but in just generally, it's a part of decentralization. So I'll go through some of these. Having a backup phone with an activated SIM card and non-activated SIM cards from other providers if you do need to create a new phone number at any point or get a new phone set up immediately, as well as a backup satellite phone if you ever are in very rural areas or plan to for long periods of time, just in case. Having backups in general of anything to access your wealth, data backups, resource backups, physical documents, multiple copies, laminated, stored in different places, stored in fireproof, waterproof places, having multiple accesses, ways to access your wealth, backups for your computer data, etc. Backups upon backups upon backups that are secure. Emergency supplies. This is more for being able to weather any kind of disaster, or, you know, just being prepared for any possible scenario that comes up, because you're not truly decentralized if, you know, you rely on the grocery system or that the trucks are going to deliver the food or what have you. If you have no backup food, you're still relying on a centralized system. And, you know, the further you can decentralize yourself from that and not be as reliant, the better. So that includes preparing for backup scenarios, emergency supplies, firearms, ammunition, the whole nine yards, as well as trying to get real estate that is off-grid or you own large amounts of land. The easiest way that this can be done is by buying empty plots and developing them. And Over the next few years, I'm going to be documenting my process of trying to acquire about 20 to 30 acres of land and developing that and putting a prefabricated house on it, and then developing the rest of the land as I go and potentially selling off parcels in the future. But we'll get into all that in future episodes as I track that. Having offshore finance, such as like a Swiss bank account, you know, it's not really reliable today, but still having other venues of wealth access, it might not matter if you don't have a lot of wealth, but as time goes on and you build up that wealth, maybe it's something to consider. And then wealth concentration, as well as authoritative oversight, understanding the risks associated with government-controlled assets and financial tools, and you know, just understanding the country that you live in and their view on capitalism and, you know, free markets, etc. Investing in assets that can't easily be taken from you, such as cryptocurrency, and not to concentrate the majority of your wealth within, you know, central banks and government-controlled systems. I concentrate the majority of my wealth in crypto. That's a personal choice, but you can do, there's many different ways for you to do this. I would just generally recommend that you avoid overly relying on these closed, very centralized systems. Shrinking your digital cash blueprint. So spending cash wherever you possibly can and avoiding using your credit card and debit card if possible. Using decentralized alternatives for pretty much anything, wherever you can. I use about 30 social platforms to ensure that my content posted is never fully removed, because there's always something out there. And while not all the platforms I share to are decentralized, most aren't really, but I view mass content distribution as a way to decentralize my content distribution process by protecting that content, whether it's removed from, you know, 20 places, there'll still be 10 more that still have that content there. And I think that's a great way to go about it. And this is the last little bit of the list, and I'll list off some of the platforms that I'm currently using. Again, not necessarily endorsing all these platforms, but this is where you'll find all of my content as an example of mass distribution for decentralization. So that's Hive, posting on ThreeSpeak and PeakD, etc., Bastion, Mines, Torum, Gab, Getter, Mastodon, X, formerly known as Twitter, Plebster, which is one app instance on Nostr, meta platforms like Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey/Library, Josh Who, Brighteon, DTube, Cost.tv, Rockfin, BitChute, Read.cash, PublishOX, Medium, Steemit, Blurt, and many more. But that's a good idea of some of the ones that I post to as an example to show you how important it is to be mass distributing content and really getting the word out there so that you don't have to worry too much about getting censored. And if you do get censored, your content will survive. I think that's pretty much most of what we're going to cover today. So before we do the outro, a quick word from my sponsor.
Thank you again to our sponsor, Apex One AI, a great cryptocurrency exchange that offers farming, DeFi, AI, liquidity pools, and much more. Get started on apexone.ai and start trading all your favorite cryptocurrencies today.
This sort of summarizes some of the lists and things that I've collected in several episodes in the past, as well as many new things that I wanted to add in and make sure were covered, as well as one or two from ChatGPT's suggestions, which I thought was funny that ChatGPT said they suggested that biometrics were not a good idea to be using and to stay away from them where possible. And yet that is the company that is doing WorldCoin. So kind of funny how that works, but let me know what you think. Is WorldCoin going to revolutionize world IDs, or is this a way to buy up everyone's iris data for very little money, and even the money that they supposedly have given out is not actually truly in the hands of those people, and it's just sitting on their app and they haven't actually made any transactions at all? They just have a number on your screen that tells you they owe you money, but they haven't really given it to you. So I'm very curious to hear what your thoughts are on that, as well as what you think about BRICS. If you're listening on Spotify, you can always comment and let me know on Twitter, now known as X, or any of the other platforms I mentioned earlier. I'm on everywhere, checking every day or two and trying to stay up on top of everything. So I'm always looking out for social messages and commentary coming from any which way. And you can also comment hashtag number one ham to let me know that you stayed to the very, very end and listened and watched for everything. I do appreciate those of you who do. It's always good to see number one him in the comments, so I know people are actually listening to the very end and really getting the full value of what we're talking about here today. Let me know if there's anything that you think I missed or that I'm wrong about. More than happy to dive into a debate about that, or you know, add to the list if there needs to be more added. But I think this is as comprehensive as I can possibly be. So let me know in the comments below. And again, thank you so much for watching. I'm Scott Cunningham, aka Scottsy Business. This is Tech and Things. Till next time. Cheers.